ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Ah, dinner time. What have we got? Yes, lovely, but no, that's not quite right. It sounds a little too buttery. No, too sweet. Way too much gravy. Ah, that sounds delicious. That's the one. Ah, yum. Is it my imagination? Or did shifting the dial on my little radio, did that shift my appetite? Another glass of wine, perhaps? And this wine, is that a little sweeter than before? Is that possible?
We play different musics to people drinking red wine, and it was impressive. The taste, the perception of taste with different kinds of music changed a lot.
In restaurants, music can play a major role. Even in food stores, I've observed through field studies, field experiments, that the music, the way it's played, influences the type of foods people end up buying.
I'm Jonathan Green, and this is Every Bite from ABC Radio National. It's all about food and the places where food, culture, science and history collide. This week, sonic seasoning. How we eat with our ears. Now, for this episode, more than any other, you may want to have something consumable on hand. Go on, grab something. That's something with a complex flavour. A coffee or some dark chocolate. Maybe. Yes, it's late enough. Perhaps a glass of red. Not too sweet, not too bitter, not too sour. Soon, you and I will be running a bit of an experiment to see whether different sounds can actually change how something tastes. The man leading us through this experiment, well, he is quite unlike any scientist I've ever met. His work on the interaction of sound and taste has been published in research papers with titles like The Taste of Scales and Chords, Let's Drink This Song Together, and Aesthetic Emotions in a Mixed Reality Gastrosonic Experience. Well, some of it sounds closer to performance art or art installation rather than lab work.
I'm an art scientist, so all these lab experiments are an inspiration for me to design artworks, and in particular, tasting with music, no? Multisensory tasting.
It's hard to know where to begin with this man's list of credentials. So, well, best he introduce himself.
Okay, of course, yes. I am Bruno Mesch. I am art scientist, so both things together, like a hybrid vocation. So my background is in music, but also in mathematics. But at some point in life, I turned to cognitive psychology. But I was always fascinated by the interplay of the senses. I studied music as a child. Music was speaking of things that were not just musical, but also of colors and shapes. And much later, I started this path studying the multisensory perception, that is, how the senses modulate each other, influence each other. And that's why I suppose I'm here.
What prompted you in your research to explore those relationships?
Well, why taste? No, why taste and music? Music because I was interested in music, but taste has a very few basic dimensions. You have the basic tastes, six basic tastes. So it's a good territory to explore connections because you have these very clear categories. Smell, for instance, or touch are much less well-defined. Taste is very prone to be influenced by other senses, by smell in the first place, but then the visual and the sounds is not just a complementary thing, but it's a part, essential part of the experience of tasting.
So having been intrigued by these relationships, what was your first experiment in this field?
Okay, the first experiment, we made a group of pianists to improvise on the name of the basic tastes. For instance, we told them to improvise something bitter. Improvise something sour. And we could analyze the chords, the notes, the dynamics, if it was loud, soft, and the organization of the music they produce. So we did this, and we found that there are a lot of consistent things that appeared across these different pianists. So, for instance, Sweet made them to improvise music that was consonant, so pleasant to listen, soft in general. The pitch was like medium to high. So each name of taste mapped to a very specific group of musical parameters, of musical features.
What did you conclude after that first experiment?
Of course, we confirmed that taste were evoking very different music. Even sour and sweet are things that are related to unripe and ripe food, no? So taste color associations are very clear, no? You associate sour with green and sweet with red or pink, no? So we hypothesized that the same would happen with music, and that was exactly the case.
I'm wondering to what extent sound can influence our perception of taste. I mean, wine, for example, how much can you change someone's perception of a particular glass of wine depending on what they hear?
Yes, we have done some experiments on that. We played different musics to people drinking red wine, and it was impressive. The taste, the perception of taste with different kinds of music changed a lot. The experiment was like this. We played the music and people drank the wine, hold the wine in mouth, and they press a button. Each time the flavor, the dominant or salient, more salient flavor changed. They had 8 buttons for the flavors of red wine. So, for instance, a button for woody, a button for bitter, a button for sour. At specific points in the music, they reported a change in perception. But there is a methodological issue with that. That is, maybe you are not feeling a different taste, but the music is priming you to choose to report a specific taste. So that's a methodological problem that we have to solve probably by using brain imaging or something. This is called, the name of this is sonic seasoning. You are altering or trying to change flavor or taste using sound.
I have made myself available for a bit of experimentation, Bruno.
Fantastic.
I have here, for example, some chocolate. I wonder if perhaps you can play me something which might alter my perception of this thing.
Of course. Just feel, Jonathan, just you hold the chocolate in mouth, mm-hmm. all the time. The music will play for about 1 minute, and there will be some change at a point, and just feel if there is some difference, some note that becomes more salient or masked or whatever. If nothing happens, no, nothing happens.
I will open my chocolate then and we can begin. Let's see. Should I be chewing the chocolate when I listen?
Or hold it in the mouth, maybe, without
just hold it there.
Activity is better. Yes, okay. Hold it. It did melt in the mouth.
I will let it melt in my mouth. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, Bruno.
Okay. Did you feel anything?
It was jarring when the change in the sound came. I had the chocolate was sweetly melting in my mouth and everything was blissful. And then suddenly everything was slightly dissonant. I felt unsettled and a little disturbed and apprehensive.
Okay, and any change in this level of sweetness or...?
I think it became, and this is counterintuitive, but I felt it became even sweeter when the music became harsher.
Okay.
Maybe I was trying to reassure myself.
I will tell you about the music and then we can discuss what you felt. The music was designed to be related to sweetness, the first half, and then related to bitterness. So sweetness is typically medium high, consonant, soft, and then bitter is very low pitches and rough, like this. So why did you feel more sweet?
I have failed.
Well, let me think why it can be. Maybe you experienced the contrast. You experience like if a background turns from white to black, no? So you feel it more definite. So it's not the usual effect that this has statistically. Statistically, you perceive if the chocolate already has bitter notes, statistically, the attention of people is directed to the bitter notes.
The particular chocolate that I was tasting is quite sweet. So perhaps
Yes. If there are no bitter notes, you cannot change
they
that.
They can't
no?
be so, emphasized. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, this was chocolate that was overwhelmingly sweet, but had some crunchy bits. And the crunchy bits became a little bit more crunchy as the music became a little more intense.
Ah, okay. So, yes, because that's a cross-modal effect, because the bitter music is rough.
Yes.
No? So, and you feel the crunchiness, which is also related to irregular texture, no?
I feel less statistically anomalous now.
Okay. There was someone that did this for Kentucky Fried Chicken, altered Jingle Bells to enhance the umami and the crunchiness of a chicken bite from Kentucky Fried Chicken, yes.
This is absolutely true. In 2024, KFC in Singapore released a track scientifically proven, they say, to enhance the flavours of their limited edition Parmesan Truffle Chicken. I kid you not. That heavy bass apparently enhances the umami taste of the truffle, while those higher frequency staccato notes supposedly enhance the crispness. What do you reckon? It certainly stirs something in me, primarily my loathing of Muzak. Anyway, I've had mixed results with the chocolate. Now, let's move on to some coffee for experiment number two.
Okay, and hold the coffee in your mouth.
Okay.
All the time. Can you do that?
I'm having a sip now, and I will hold the coffee in my mouth.
Hold it and savor the coffee.
Interesting. I feel that my experience this time was more consonant with the sound, that the darker sounds emphasized the bitterness of the coffee to me. I could feel that. Perhaps it was a suggestion from our chocolate experience, but I could feel that quite distinctly. And then when the music became more sparkly and effervescent, that played on the brighter notes of the coffee. It was quite a perceptible direct relationship.
Fantastic. So the first part, again, was related to bitterness, and the second to sourness. So this kind of high pitch, dissonant and fast is the inducing or either sourness perception or priming you to report that is brighter or more sour. We don't know. We have your testimony, but we should look into your brain to properly verify this.
We need electrodes, I think, Bruno.
Exactly. It's very difficult to do. You need the fMRI, or it's difficult to drink something inside the resonator, and it's very expensive, but we should do it sometime.
What happens in the restaurant where I'm hearing all sorts of sound? Some are softer, some are louder. How does that affect me?
Yes, that should affect you somehow. You have to pay attention, of course, to be conscious about that. But in a subtle way, that should change your perception. For instance, noise, ambient with noise, there are some results that noise may enhance umami taste and maybe dampen the sweetness. So the restaurants should be aware of what they are playing.
Yeah, I wonder how many are aware or at least are doing it with a sense of deliberation.
Yes, no, it's not so popular. But for instance, British Airways designed the menu with Charles Spence from Oxford based on Spence's investigations on the effect of noise, the noise of the turbines. So some people are using this.
That's right. In 2014, British Airways created a playlist to accompany in-flight meals and enhance the taste. As Bruno says, it was a collaboration with Charles Spence, a professor of experimental psychology who you might remember from our episode about cutlery. He argued cutlery can change our perception of food. That playlist was designed to counter the impact that air travel has on our taste buds. According to studies, we lose around 30% of our sensitivity to sweet and salty foods due to the low pressure and humidity. And research Charles has done suggests that the white noise inside the cabin can suppress our sensitivity too. Apparently, the playlist included songs by James Blunt and Madonna to enhance the sweetness of the dessert. Yeah, personally, I'd perhaps prefer they just add more sugar. You're beautiful. From ABC Radio National, you're listening to Every Bite. I'm Jonathan Green. So, Bruno Mesh calls himself an art scientist, and he seems to be in this field, well, largely for the fun of it. There is a parallel stream to this research, though, of increased interest to the British Airways and Kentucky Fried Chicken to the world, and that is sensory marketing. One researcher in this field has found that music not only has the potential to change our perception of food, it can actually affect the choices we make.
Yes, in restaurants, music can play a major role. Even in food stores, I've observed through field studies, field experiments done in collaboration with some major retail chains in Europe, that the music, the way it's played, influences the type of foods people end up buying. I'm Dr. Dipayan Biswas. I'm the Frank Harvey Endowed Professor of Marketing at the University of South Florida in Tampa, Florida, USA.
And background music, it seems such a common thing in so many modern settings.
Yes. So what was really fascinating when I first started exploring this topic is that a lot of major retail chains, I'm not allowed to name them because of non-disclosure agreements, but very famous retail chains often would have arbitrary decisions about music. I remember once having a meeting with senior executives and they said they have music in the stores. I asked them, what's the strategy behind the music? They said, oh, we don't have a strategy. We just let the local store managers decide. And that's not a good idea because music conveys a lot of different kind of like feelings, emotions, meanings. It affects our behaviors in different ways. So unless you have a consistent story or consistent pattern, unless it's tied to some goals, it can backfire in a bad way.
Does silence make us uncomfortable?
Depends. So there are different segments. So there is one segment of the population that actually enjoys silence. But on the whole, overall, a majority of us would feel uncomfortable with total silence. So a little bit of background music or even artificial background noise can actually help create a certain kind of mood. In my research with my collaborators, what we found was the music volume made a difference. And we teamed up with a couple of different companies in Sweden and Europe. What we did was, on different days, we played the same music playlist, but at different volumes. And what we noticed consistently across those restaurants and the stores is that people, on average, tend to buy unhealthy foods to a greater extent, like the pizzas, high-calorie, high-fat foods, more when there was louder ambient music. When it was low volume ambient music, relatively speaking, sales of salads and other healthier foods went up. We found it also in a restaurant in Sweden, in Stockholm, same pattern of results. We also did similar studies in the US, in Florida, we also found the same pattern. So the music volume made people order different types of foods.
What is happening physiologically with volume? What does it do to our mind, to our brain?
Good question. I'm glad you use the term physiological. So when things happen physiologically, like it's the brain reacting to stimuli or inputs from the outside world, it's often non-conscious. In other words, we don't realize we are being influenced. What does that mean? So for example, if you're at the store and you see buy one, get one free, 50% off, that's more like conscious processing. It's not non-conscious. You see, okay, how much money I save. But sensory inputs, whether it's through lighting, scent, and music in this case, it influences in non-conscious ways. So when music is being played, it actually reverberates within our internal system. I'll give you an example. Certain kinds of music would make us almost feel like dancing. Certain kinds of music won't make us feel like that. So the neurons inside our body, inside our brains, almost start sort of getting activated, dancing with certain kinds of music. So what happens with loud music is high energy. Sound is a form of mechanical wave, so it's a form of energy. So when that energy enters the body with that higher energy, it tends to excite us more. It's non-conscious. It's not that you're feeling it, but you can measure it. There are devices that can measure it. So when we feel more excited, we tend to go for more indulgent foods. And that has been shown by other studies in the past. So our research contribution was linking it to loud music. On the other hand, low-volume music has a calming, relaxing effect for the body. And when we are more relaxed, it's more aligned with healthier foods like salads.
The type of music, the genre of music, the tempo, the key, those things don't matter?
So they should matter. In our studies, we had mostly like neutral type of music. In a lab study, we did use Metallica, but still like we found this effect. But I agree, like if you bring in other elements, that could have like interactive effects or confounding effects. So for example, like if it's a fast-paced music, even at a relatively lower volume, it can still have an exciting effect. But in our experiments, we had like the latest pop, like hits, like just in the neutral genre, nothing too fast-paced, not too slow-paced, nothing like too exciting by itself. So it's like regular pop music.
The idea too that in a more relaxed state, we will eat healthily, that when we're excited, we want pizza, when we're relaxed, we want salad. Why is that? What is happening psychologically?
Very, very good question. So when we make food choices, and again, I'm talking about a broad spectrum, it may not hold for 100% of the people. In fact, it won't. So it's like it holds for people in the middle. There are people in the extremes who have very specific food choices. Nothing in the ambience would influence them. Like US elections, none of the political parties target like the extreme left, extreme right, because you cannot influence them. So all ads, political ads are targeted towards so-called swing states, swing voters. So it's the same thing here.
The swing eater.
Exactly. I like your choice of term. I didn't think of that term, but you're right. So the swing eater likes people who could be persuaded. So what happens is when we make food choices, for most of us, those of us in the middle, we tend to make trade-offs. So the trade-off between healthy and unhealthy food is that unhealthy foods provide instant gratification. That chocolate cake would make you happy. It tastes better than, let's say, broccoli for most people. Chocolate cakes taste better than broccoli. So that having the chocolate cake right now is unlikely to make a big difference in the next 30 minutes. But if you keep having that over a period of time, 3 months later, you'll have negative consequences. Same with the salad. Just eating salad or broccoli doesn't do anything right away. If you keep eating salad, broccoli in the long run, that's good for your body. So the main thing is the human brain has to make the trade-off between instant gratification, the chocolate cake, pizza, versus long-term benefits, the salads, the broccolis. So when we are more calm and relaxed, the brain tends to make more rational decisions. Again, this has been shown in many psychological and other domains. So we make more rational, long-term focused decisions. When we are more excited, we look for more instant gratification. Like that's when people drink more, eat more unhealthy foods, because then you're in a state of arousal where you want instant gratification. So from a business perspective, often they would play the music based on what they want to sell, like where do they have their margins or what type of restaurant are they known for. So McDonald's high volume music might be good. But if you are a restaurant that wants to be known as a healthy food outlet, then low volume music is what you should go for.
Human senses are complex. Now, sensory inputs are multifaceted. We don't close our ears just because our mouth is full. Working out how our senses interoperate is, yes, fascinating. Maybe trying to work all that out is an end in itself, an endless amusement. There's a serious side too. In a world where sellers play with the subconscious in order to change our behaviour, it's worth having a second thought about what our senses are telling us and who might be calling the tune. Every Bite is your weekly journey to the places where food, culture, science and history collide. Every Bite tells a story. Thanks to our guests Bruno Mesh and Dipyan Biswas. Now, we love hearing from you, dear listener. And I want to know, did you try that taste-altering experiment we ran earlier? Did you sense any change? I would love to hear how it went for you. Shoot us an email. Everybite, all one word, everybite@abc.net.au. everybite@abc.net.au. And if you didn't have food or drink on hand at the time, well, you can listen back to this episode anytime at all, coffee and chocolate in hand, on the ABC Listen app. Every Bite. It's made on Wurundjeri country and produced by Kim Jurek. I'm Jonathan Green.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.